Hello, I am Dorgan Kishu, Paladin and Dragon Rider. Welcome to the first episode of Dragon Riders, a show about Dungeons & Dragons, Dungeon Masters, players, and content creators. This is my kind of co-host, Caitlin. She is a player and Dungeon Master and also is writing a story based on, actually on our D&D campaign. And these are two people, Jason from Take 20 and Tim. I'm not using last names. You guys are welcome if you'd like. Known them since I got onto 5e in 2017, and these guys have been super encouraging and supportive since I met them. They're just awesome people. They really, truthfully, I think that they just love D&D, and they're very positive and supportive of people that are into it. That's part of the reason I invited them. So anyway, we can go ahead and get started. This is our first episode, so bear with me. Kate, if you want to tell a little bit about yourself.
Oh, okay. My name is Caitlin Q. Calkins. I'm a writer and just general love creative things. I got into D&D sort of by accident, but really fell in love with it. And so I've been a player for, I don't know how long, a couple of years.
Around 2 years, yeah.
And am learning to DM. Also writing a story, as you said, but happy to be here, kind of co-hosting or just being here for this interview type show that you've decided to create. It's super great.
Awesome. All right, Jason, let me start by saying that, I've been playing D&D. I started as a teenager, and then I was again in my 20s, and then 5 years started in my 40s, and since I've been exposed to you and I watched your show and your guys, you're one of the best DMs I've ever seen. I'm not trying to just pump your ego. I know you're a kind of guy that does not like to talk about yourself, but I think the enthusiasm of D&D is winning the battle. Like, you're putting yourself out there with everything. I'm not trying to say I know you that well, but I will say that when I watch, I just go, this guy's into it, but I played with D&Ds when I was younger. I played with D&Ds or DMs, sorry, that were, ego-y and battling over rules, and it just sucked. The reason I became a DM myself was because I was really shy and didn't really know any people that played, and anyone that I did played were kind of jerks, but that was a long time ago. So I ended up learning how to be a DM, and I don't want to go too much into myself, but I learned to be a DM because I wanted to play. But anyway, my point is you're one of the best. I know Matt Mercer is a great DM. It's not just that they're a popular show. He's a great DM. The guy I really like, since I got into the D&D community, the Dungeon Masters have really stood out were you, Matt, and Will from Guy Created Encounter Roleplay, who I don't even know if he's part of it anymore, but he was a great guy. And Kate, be honest, she's one of the, I didn't mean to hit you with that, I didn't write it in your notes, but she's been running a second campaign for just about a year for me and a few other people, and it helps that she's a writer probably, but I think she's a great DM. So I'll leave you alone now, Kate. Sorry about that. A little sad. Anyway. But what don't, go ahead and identify like what you do with D&D, and I'll just go from there, Jason.
Well, I've been playing D&D since I was 10 years old. I think I mentioned that before. That would put me at about 1981. So I've played basic and expert all the way back to the box sets. Spent a lot of time learning how to be a dungeon master from a guy. He lived straight right across the street from me. He was my dungeon master. He's the guy I learned from, and he is a direct He is the direct reason why I DM the way I DM today. Very laid back, not rules lawyery, but allowing the rules to flow in and out of the game in a way that, well, you know what? It tells a better story, or it makes for a more epic moment. Just creates a better flow for things. And he knew how to judge character. He was a good judge of character and people, and knew how to deal with people in a larger environment. and stuff like that. So for me, I've been a player and a dungeon master, and now we're content creators. I never wanted to really be a content creator, but we were sitting around the table several years back with my kids and a few of our friends, and we were playing some AD&D. And I said, hey guys, what do you think about this idea? And the kids were like, my youngest and my oldest were at the table playing, and they both were like, yeah, we should be on the internet. We should be streaming this live. And I was like, okay, well, what do we need to do?
Yeah.
So they started teaching me. They started teaching me about the process of getting online and going to Twitch and setting up accounts and linking accounts to different things and being a creator. And 3 years later, we've got, if I'm not mistaken, we've got close to 150 or 60 videos on YouTube in one playlist. Wow. We have like 10 playlists. We have gaming stuff on our channel where we do a Saturday morning show where we play video games and we talk about D&D, right? We drink some coffee, sit around, yak about D&D, yak about games. Myself or he is sometimes my co-host on the show, Kelly. You can find him at Kelly Arrows. I mentioned him the other day. He's another DM in our group. He's a player at the table here in our little D&D game, but he runs a game as well. On Friday nights, every Friday nights, he runs a game on the channel called Chronicles of Cryalis. And he's a terrific DM. So if you ever want another voice, another interview, I've talked with him about it. He said he'd love to do it sometime.
Oh, awesome.
Just sit down and chat with you.
Can I ask a question? Sorry, I don't want to. So having so much experience being a dungeon master before becoming a content creator and deciding to go that route, did you find that there was any sort of a change or a mentality shift, or do you, like, when you went from that kind of, you know, to being in front of people, maybe being more like held more accountable to what you did, or was there any sort of mental shift or anything that kind of had to, or was it exactly the same from before? You know what I'm asking? I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, okay. I'm picking up what you're laying down, and that's an excellent question, Kate. There is a fundamental, a switch that turns on and off when you get in front of the camera. There is, for me anyway, I don't know if it's for anybody else, but I know for me, I like to make sure that the story is still flowing along the same line. So picking up where we let off and making sure we have some continuity. Is it perfect? You go back and watch our episodes, our continuity is all over the place. It's not perfect, but there is a semblance of continuity in our game.
Yeah, I get that.
So yeah, there's a difference when you're in front of the camera. You have to be a little more, you have to be focused on the game and what you're doing in the game and not so much on what's going on perhaps in the world outside. And that's what we try to do here. We try to stay out of what's going on in the outside world. Let's stay and let's focus on gaming, on the gaming community, promoting others and being like that, like moving that forward, promoting other people, promoting James, promoting like your module, James. That's where we think we got to go with Take 20 D&D, is be pushing that promotion narrative and moving that. But as for games and thinking about back when I was younger dungeon mastering, it's not much different. It really isn't. You just do it. And you actually You have to be aware of what you're saying because somebody with younger ears might be watching. And I know I have a few folks at the our little D&D table that are, it's a little more mature language. So we make sure we try to keep it. I think we have a warning on our Twitch channel that says this is for mature audiences only. So we're aware of that. But as for the game portion, it's just like you do it. It kind of like you just meld into it. Not much difference from running a private game or being in front of a camera.
Yeah, it seems to me, like I said, I'm really a people person, I'm kind of an introvert extrovert. I love people and connecting like that, but I'm not necessarily the person that wants to be like center stage.
Do you feel that kind of going into, you know, being kind of more content creator, you kind of grew as a DM, or do you feel like it's kind of just the same?
Yes, because I do feel this responsibility now. For some reason, I feel a little bit more responsible to anybody who's listening or like who's in the audience to tell, to have a story. It doesn't even have to be a good story, but a story that people can follow. So yeah, I do feel a kind of a responsibility to follow that story.
That's super awesome. I love that that it's something that people I don't quite understand, and I didn't understand before I played D&D, is that it really is you're creating a story with other people, and it really is that. It really is you are creating a story, and I think that's super amazing and something that I'm grateful that D&D is becoming more like well known, you know, to people like me who are like, nah, I'll never do that, you know, kind of thing, because it there's so much value in it. And so I think that it's awesome, Jason, that you have kind of a show that is helping kind of show that, you know, helping to show that it can be a story, that it can be this sort of, like you said, continuous kind of thing that everyone's kind of invested in, and invested in the story arc, and invested in where it goes. And I think as long as everyone is kind of, and that's sort of how I am, is if everyone is kind of taking it seriously in a way, like the story at least seriously and their character seriously, even if it's fun and funny things happen, or even if it's you know, as long as they're invested in the story. And I think that that's what a good DM can do, is kind of make the characters and the players invested in what's going on in the story. So I don't know if you had any other questions.
That's the biggest challenge I have, is having the players invested in the story. So if I have a challenge for me, personally, it's trying to get the most investment, get the players to invest in the story and in the idea of the storyline and where we're going. That's the toughest part for me.
So. Do backstory? I know some DMs, they do that partly with backstories. Has that been your experience, or do you do it mainly in other ways?
I know the players wanted to have backstories at the beginning of our campaign. So they at the beginning of the new camp, like it's not even the new campaign. It was a continuation of something we started, a test, so to speak. So the players created new characters. They created small backstories, like maybe one paragraph, three or four lines, five lines.
Yeah.
And what we've done over the past 2.5 years now, and we did take this extended break since the crisis, we've built their backstories. Yeah. Now, we've actually lost one of our players here. Really? At the table.
Is that the mage? The gnome?
Rob, the gnome wizard, yeah.
Oh,
Rob.
That's too bad. I'm sorry to hear that. He's
moved, actually, it's really great. They're a great good news story for Rob. He's moved on in his professional career and has moved up and has moved on in his personal life with some great things going on there. So really good stuff.
Well, that's good.
And so we
so it wasn't an argument at the table.
No. He's moved on with some really great opportunities for his life.
So I hear real life just, can be okay.
Yeah. We just wished him all the best.
That's great.
So if you watch or listen on the podcast, I just released episode 80 on YouTube and on the podcast. You can find out what has happened with Quillian, the gnomish wizard.
Nice.
I won't give it away.
That's cool. Yeah, we'll be I'll be putting links and everything under this. Yeah, I guess the only other thing I would ask is your goal. Do you have a particular goal with, I mean, you've kind of touched on it already, the goal with Take 20 is to you want to support other people and you want to tell your stories. Is there anything else you'd add at the end of this a goal with Take 20, where you want it to go? Or
I think ultimately we'd love to have it grow.
Yeah,
we'd love to have it grow, have more shows. We'd love to have people, we'd love to just have people watch and enjoy it. Like, honestly, we put up all of our outtakes on our Patreon for people to enjoy. We try to generate, and we're not going to sugarcoat anything. We try to generate some income to pay for a few things.
Of course.
So we've managed to generate, we managed to get a few things through people who have supported us.
That's great.
We have some great supporters out there, Draconis Firebrand, and we've managed to get and acquire a few things, and we're hoping to implement them here in the future. So, yeah, we'd love to have people watch our Patreon and enjoy, even if people don't support us financially. We just honestly would love to have people's feedback.
That's a big deal.
We would just love to have feedback, good, bad, or ugly. We love feedback. We love hearing what people think.
Yeah, that's a big one for me. When I did my first module last year, it was I created a printed one and I figured mostly people would get PDF, but I only sold 20 books, which is fine. You know, I was new, blah, blah. But 18 of them were printed, which shocked me. And
you sold 20 units?
I sold 20 units of my module.
That's crazy good.
Is it?
Holy moly, yeah, dude.
I mean, I know there's people selling tons of them out there. Is it? I don't even know. But 18, which surprised me, is 18 of them were printed. I love the printed, because I love old school. I love printed books. But the thing about it was that was hard, was it's a good problem to have, right? They sold on Amazon. Originally, I was selling them on another site, but nobody was really going there. They preferred Amazon because it's a known site. You know, they take a lot of royalties, Amazon. So I feel it's less about me wanting to make money and more about me not wanting them to really make a bunch of money off my book. I don't mind them making some, but they kind of take a big chunk. But because people bought on Amazon, I have no idea who bought them. So as far as this whole wanting to hear what people think, I'll be going nuts. Well, I want people to know, tell me about the dungeon. Tell me about the fortress. Tell me about the bad guy. Tell me about the creatures. I didn't get a lot of feedback, and it's something I had to just kind of do. That was the hardest part. Of course everybody wants to make money doing what they love, but it was really, but same with D&D is a big enthusiasm thing. And it's something I've loved for 40 years. But, I've told this to Kate, it's like, well, I had my brother was down in January, and I ran, Kate actually was running it for me and him. I was playing NPCs and she was shifting it up so that I wouldn't know what was going on. And they both had honest responses to the book. Kate, just at some point when she's running it, she's just like, this is great. And I guess it was user-friendly, or maybe you liked the content as far as, I don't want to go too much into my book, but, and then my brother was just like, you got to make more of these. So that was just kind of the two compliments that I got a whole lot. I know they're my brother. I know they're my girlfriend, but I hold their opinions very high, and they're not people that just give out opinions, even though I'm, connected to them. I've had those two really kind of sustain me, because I really didn't get a lot of feedback from people out there that bought it and things like that. So I totally know what you mean about feedback. So yeah, Take 20, you guys are authentic, funny, talented, warm, friendly, really friendly. When you all interact with the camera or whatever, you all, even the shyest, seem very friendly towards the people that are watching, whether it's one or 10 or, you know, 50 or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I want you guys to be more watched. I think that it's not just, obviously the whole money thing is weird, because we all need money. Of course, we'd love to get it in a way where we're doing something that we love. I mean, it seems like an obvious thing.
Yep. I do think it's an amazing thing. This might be even outside of D&D, but I think it's an amazing thing that the way that the world is even heading is allowing people who are creative or gamers or whatever to do what they love, even if it's like a part-time income or supplemental income or something that like that. It's just, to me, it's amazing with Twitch, amazing with Twitter, amazing with all these resources people have now where they actually can do something like that, where they're making some sort of an income off of it and able to do what they love. And able, you know, I just think it's an amazing thing. You know, I mean, not to bring up Critical Role, but like, say what you will about them, but they sort of like opened up the space for people to now kind of do this. Mm-hmm. And everyone is like different, you know, in what they do with their streams and everything, but it is really hopeful that you know, that people can do something like that and give back in the way that they have, and you know, and kind of have the feedback. And you know, when I watch them, like, you know, the character art is inspiring. So much of people kind of resonating with the story and the characters is really amazing. And so I think that's amazing that's sort of like a goal of yours, Jason, is that you want kind of that feedback or that kind of support. Mm-hmm. Because I think it's really vulnerable to share your stories like that. It's really vulnerable to role play in front of people and to be a DM in front of people. And to, you know, like, you really are sharing like a deep part of yourself when you're doing stuff like this. And so having people support you in that way, like, is really important. And so I think it's great that we have a show like this where we can maybe expose you, so more people can actually learn about you and watch your show. So you can get that support. I want to watch it more. I think I've seen it a couple times, but I'm excited now after hearing about your goals and all this. So thank you for sharing that. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's and like I say, I think part of it is there's just so much stuff out there, but there's a lot of good stuff, and everybody should, you know, you don't need to have a Critical Role production to be streaming, of course. And that goes for Dungeon Master. I meant to touch on this when I mentioned like the Dungeon Masters that have stood out to me. I wasn't saying, I know there's a thing, it's not a competition, anybody can be a Dungeon Master. I just know that I'd had some bad experiences with Dungeon Masters where, like I said, rule lawyers or egos. Mm-hmm. And to see people that are like you guys that are just fully engaged with the players and telling your story and creating the world and just the raw enthusiasm, that's, but yeah, so, well, cool. We'll get all those links out. I really do want Take 20 to continue to get more known out there. So hopefully, maybe this will help.
Appreciate it.
I don't know. I hope it does.
I do have one final question. Are you going to try to do something different with, if you get enough support, than Critical Role, or, and I hate to compare everything to Critical Role, but were you wanting to maybe have merchandise, wanting to do that sort of thing where you have books or have that sort of thing, you know, have merchandise or, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah, no, I absolutely, that's a great question. Yeah, we were looking at merch and possible merchandising options, and those options are there. We just haven't moved in that direction yet. So,
yeah.
But it's definitely on the table for us. We are looking at it, have been looking at it for quite some time. So yeah, we'd like to have, and we've talked to a few people about, hey, how would we get this into, say, a comic book form or into a story, into a paperback novel sort of thing. And that, before I even knew about Critical Role, I kind of had that idea in mind. So that's, I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, it did. Thanks.
Yeah, just to get this out there, Critical Role, I know not everybody watches and not everybody likes it, but I one thing I don't like is the people kind of make it like, you know, he's not that great. Da-da-da-da. You know, people kind of, either you love it or there's a lot of loving it or hating Critical Role. And I just, you know, just personally, I just think that, you know, just because they're having all this success, I really feel that these are a pretty humble group of people other than Sam. Yep. All right. So any final thoughts, Jason, Kate?
Oh, go ahead.
No, you go ahead, Tim.
No. We're not to Tim yet. He can wait.
He's going to say something about Jason, right? Wasn't he going to say something about Jason?
Either of you.
Because you said final.
No, I'm good.
I apologize. Good. I didn't realize Tim had anything to say about Jason. So
I have a lot to say about Jason. Let me tell you, I have a lot to say. All right. No, you know, Critical Role obviously is, unfortunately, people use it as a benchmark, or they, I guess new players look at that and they think that's kind of the typical game. And it isn't, because in terms of, you know, the resources, the amount of resources they have, technology resources, gameplay resources, the voice talent, the acting talent around them, everything there is just a hyped up version of D&D, which isn't bad. I'm a fan of the show. I love the show. I watch as often as I can.
You have to not worry so much. It's voice talent is not that it's good. It's okay. I have many voice talents too.
But I think what attracted me to the Take 20 show was when I watched that and I was looking at it, I was like, wow, this is an authentic D&D game. This is really what a D&D game looks like. And then the more that I watched and saw Jason as a DM, his talent is just incredible. He's just an incredible DM. So even then I was like, well, maybe it's not so much typical D&D when you have a DM like that. That's good. But I what I enjoyed about it was it was really representative. It was a group of people sitting around playing a game, enjoying each other's company, having a good time, and not really worrying about all the peripheral stuff. And that's kind of what drew me to it and why I was watching. I just love it. And in terms of your DMing ability, yeah, it's clear. You've been playing this game for years, and I totally agreed with you on that point where you talked about how playing the game in those early basic editions and playing the game now, it's really not that different. It's still Dungeons & Dragons. It has
at the end of the day, Tim, is it what you make it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, exactly. Everybody that's sitting at that table is there for a different reason. Mostly, it's very rare to have everybody at the table that has the same agenda. They're all there because, you know, they want to role play really hard, or everybody is there because it's just an escapism, beer and pretzels type game. Everybody there is there for a different reason. And I think the key is making sure that everybody has fun, everybody's enjoying themselves, that kind of fellowship, so to speak, no matter what it might be. And that's real D&D for me. That's what a real D&D game.
Awesome, Tim.
Tim.
Okay, you wanted to ask Jason, say something else to Jason?
Yeah, I'd like to, like, your guys' home game.
Oh, you have questions for the host.
I do. I have your guys' home game. Like, is it anywhere we can find it, or is it just your guys' home game?
You know, I've run a couple groups. I ran a major, really three campaigns, really. I've played DM solo people, and I've played some online with people, but I had a campaign when I was a teenager, I had a campaign in my late 20s, and then I had one with this 5e with Kate, started in the beginning of 2018, and we have played a lot. I mean, she's level 26 now. You know, I've never even, 25, 26?
I've lost track now.
But we've played a lot, though, to get to be there. And the highest I'd ever gone was like level 8, 9, or 10 or something in my other campaigns. But we don't go ahead.
No, I was going to say that, you know, we just sort of started doing it for fun, because it was it's just what we do for fun. You know, we play D&D. We don't like watch TV that much. It's like what we do as a couple, what we do like as friends, what we do, you know, we just play D&D together. And I know that because of accessibility to other people, maybe, that are interested in it, we didn't necessarily do it with other people. We played for a good amount of time before we even thought about it might be something that other people might enjoy to watch. So there's not really any place you can see us playing. But I fell in love with the story, with the James's DMing and his characters, and I fell in love with my character. Obviously, she's behind me, and I'm obsessed with her. That's why I'm writing the thing I'm writing, is because mm-hmm. I want the story to be exposed. Even though it won't be gameplay or D&D, I did want the characters to be alive and my character to be alive and the story to be alive. But we have talked about whenever we feel the story has ended, maybe doing another thing where we do maybe do it on Twitch or something like that with a new character. I'm very focused, really laser focused. And so for me, it's going to be I don't know when I'm going to not be focused on my character and the story and everything. I'm writing it. So I'm going to probably have to be writing the story while we do another type of character. And mm-hmm. we'll see if I can do that, because I'm kind of, don't want to be comparing stories or characters or all that kind of thing. But yeah, you can go on, James.
How about Tim?
Our game is, I don't think anybody at our table, we all have zero interest, I'm sure, in putting anything online in terms of Twitch. Mm-hmm. Our game is just our game. We're just friends that are having fun, rolling dice, eating snacks.
Yep.
I don't think there's any real interest in that type of, I don't have any interest. I don't think my players do either.
Yeah.
So, majority of people, I would think, although there's a lot that want to and are doing it these days. Yeah, with ours, when I got into, in 2017, when I even got back into D&D, I found out about 5e. I started, I wanted to be a player first to learn about the rules, even though I know that, now that I know them, they're not, I just wanted to learn the specifics of the 5e system. So I was a player during 2017. I asked this guy if he would run a group, because I wanted to start out as a player, and he knew how to play 5e. So we did that for on and off. I've talked about it before. The group wasn't, it was really good. One third, it was not good, because there were players mm-hmm. in there that were kind of dominant. And the other third, people would cancel last minute, which was really hard. I'd already have taken a few drinks of wine, and then I hope the DM would come on and say, oh, by the way, we're not playing tonight. And so I preferred earlier notice. And hold on one second.
Did we want to talk about Tim's game?
No, we're not. No, we're good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear more about Tim's game.
No. We haven't even gotten to the bright orange background here. So then after that group broke up, I started to write about a group, and then she had been exposed to Dungeons and Dragons. Her brother tried to get her to play, and it just wasn't working, I guess, a while back, and she never thought she'd ever play. But I had her sit in and with me when I played this group in 2017, and they kept wanting her to join. So that was her first experience of actually playing D&D. And getting to, and then also Critical Role, I think, was an exposure. And that's kind of thing about Critical Role, is it shows the inside of what goes on, because it's hard to explain to people why they should play D&D. It's almost like you got to play and then you'll get it. But anyway, so she created a character, Badass Barbarian, in this other campaign. And when that campaign ended, it was hard to lose her. But then after that, at some point in 2018, and I was writing a story about a group, just because I just didn't have I wasn't in a group. I was going kind of crazy now that I was into D&D again. And she even ran at me to level 5 one time. But she wanted me to, create a campaign for her. And who knew it would go 2+ years, level 26, crazy. And now it's going to be this. she's actually going to have to write a lot of books in order to actually tell our story. But she's starting right now at the beginnings, and it's really great. So. But anyway, yeah, unfortunately, I do try to tweet about it, Jason, as you've probably seen, and I have people say, oh, God, I'd love to hear it or watch it. But yeah, it's not something that we've put out there, out into the media. But if we may at some point, if I get, the guts to do Twitch Live or Twitch or whatever, I'll run a new one with us and maybe some other people. Or she'll run the group that we have. I don't know. But let's get to the next guest. Thank you so much, Jason. That's awesome. I really wanted to know more about Take 20. Tim, identify what you are. You player, dungeon master, content.
I'm a player and reluctant dungeon master when I have to be, when they won't let me play, or people are like, no, I'm done gaming for a while, then I'll jump in and DM. I want to say, you know, this idea of putting games on Twitch or streaming them, I think it's important. There's a lot of, even still now, we're what, you know, 2020, 2021, there's a lot of misinformation, a lot of misconception about what Dungeons and Dragons is and how people play. And again, the play style is going to vary based on the group. Like Critical Role, that's not always necessarily a representative of what every table looks like. Even Take 20, as authentic as that's not necessarily a microcosm for every game or the game as a whole, the way the game is played as a whole. I remember when I first started playing D&D, the first game I played, I'd never played before. It was me, the guy who sold me his basic box, and my dad. My dad wanted to see what this was all about. And we played, and my dad, 2 degrees in English literature, taught English literature, taught mythology. You think for sure. He loved the fantasy genre, a big Tolkien fan. He's a huge reader. He's a bibliophile. You would think he would love D&D. We got done, and he was like, wow, that was really boring. That was just terrible. He didn't understand. He was supportive of the fact that I wanted to play, but he didn't understand. And later when the Satanic Panic really came into play, my mom freaked out and took all my D&D stuff and my dice. And my dad was just kind of like, that's silly. I've played it. It's, you know, there's nothing going on there. It's just really a boring game. So I think these different games that come up on Twitch are important. The people playing online is important so that those who are interested can log in and look and watch people play and see what's going on and see the different play styles and see how that game is not to, this is probably heresy quoting a scripture. It's all things to all people, you know? So it is really important that people, I think, play on Twitch and play online and put their content and their creation out there. I think that's, nothing could be more important in terms of the game.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm going to interrupt. I do think it's like you said earlier, that people come to D&D for different reasons. You know, some people need it to escape after like their stressful week, or some people need it as like a huge creative outlet. You know, some people need it just to like escape in a story for a while. You know, some, like, I think that it is good, like what you're saying, that that people are exposed to different types of play, because different types of play will resonate with different people. You know, there might be one that's a little bit more low key, that's a little bit more like lots of jokes and maybe a little bit more raunchy or whatever, that people might enjoy more than like more of a serious kind of campaign or a story arc or whatever you want to call happens in D&D games. So yeah, I was just saying, I think that's an awesome point that you're saying there. Do you think that when you play D&D, you're in one of those aspects more than the other? Do you think you're there more for just to kind of escape, or to kind of just relieve stress, or just because you love it? Do you know why you play?
Sorry. It's more than one thing. One, I do like the escapism, you know, especially now with everything that's going on in our country and the world. There's a lot of stress, there's a lot of pressure, you know, you have work pressure, so it's nice to sit down for 4 hours and be someplace else, be somewhere else, focus on something that kind of dulls the noise in the back of your head. At the same time, I've always loved the genre. I'm a big reader. My degree is in English literature. I love characters. I love storytelling. I think storytelling, I agree with like Matt. I know his focus is always on the collective story, telling of stories. That's a basic innate human need. That's something that's ingrained in us, I think. And so I definitely enjoy that part. When I DM, I enjoy creating. I, you know, enjoy trying to make stuff up and try to engage my players in different way and create little pieces of the campaign that are specific to that player. I enjoy all those things. All that's part of D&D for me. All of it.
Yeah, it's funny with me. I've always been into fantasy and sci-fi, you know, forever. D&D was never an escape for me. I know a lot of people, even when I played World of Warcraft, was it never an escape. And I know really people were really trying to escape when they were doing that, I think. For me, it's always been this world. I mean, I I'm also a writer. I like to create worlds. Being a dungeon master was like, I didn't plan on being one, and once I became one, it's like my favorite thing in the world. But then you hit a point where you're like, God, I just want to be a player. So I've definitely hit that point, and I love both now. But with Dungeons and Dragons, like, okay, get back to my point here. I kind of lost my, all right. My point is that for me, it was never actually escapism. I just loved the genre. I loved, you know, theatrical kind of acting. I never want to be an actor, but I loved, you know, doing all that, the voices and story and all this. But with what's been happening the last bit here is really where I felt the need for the escapism. I really truly felt like I'd rather fight a dragon than be in reality right now. And not, of course, fighting a dragon sounds cool, but you can die. No, but so I really did get, during this last, I guess, year or so, I really had, D&D really did become a place to escape from everything. And funny thing about it is it really just pulls you in. It purifies the content of your mind, really. You know what I mean? Yeah, you're creating magical elves and everything else, but you're really just kind of resetting the system in a certain way by withdrawing from everything around you. You're really going in and kind of purifying yourself from things that are affecting you and aren't necessarily, you know.
I do find it interesting. This might just be outside, you know, of whatever, but I do find it interesting that some of us are, or maybe more pulled to share our stories and be more of like content creators. And then there are some people like Tim who may not be drawn in that direction to share. And I find that kind of interesting. I guess, is it just because it's kind of like a personal thing, or you don't really feel like you're drawn to that sort of thing, Tim? Or is it just kind of like a space, you know? I mean, Jason, you said you never even thought about, you know, going into that space until it was kind of like agreed upon with the whole group. Do you think like if some of your players came and said, oh yeah, we should start streaming, you would be like, even maybe think about it? Or is it just kind of like you're just not into that zone, or what exactly is the, I just find it interesting that there's like a difference in that.
You know, I've been playing with most of the people at my table. We've been playing together a long, long time. My wife, for most instance, is probably the newest member at the table, and we've been married 28 years now. So she's like the newest member at the table, maybe, except when my daughter plays, and that's just a function of age. I think everybody there, just the whole idea of being on media or being on camera just isn't something that's important, I guess. What's important is the being there, the fellowship, the collective, the being together, the having a good time. That's the main focus. I'm not trying to blow off your question. I just can't conceivably in my head think of somebody at the table that would come and go, hey, you know, we should do Twitch. We should go on the internet and stream our game too. I couldn't see anybody on there doing that. Maybe.
No. I don't think you're blowing it off. I was just trying to like think about it. I just think it's kind of cool that some people are drawn towards sharing their stories and wanting to kind of have that. And some people don't feel drawn to that.
So I think where that's coming from is that innate human ingrained part of our nature that storytelling is so important to, that there are people that see that moving out onto Twitch and sharing the story that comes from some type of primal inside need that drives part of the idea for Twitch. I'm not sure that's the idea of Critical Role. I'm sure a lot of it had to do with you know, maybe making some money, business opportunities. They had that talent. The group had that talent. They're all voice actors. They knew that there was a possibility that, you know, they could turn that into a business, and it turned out successful. Thank goodness for them and for the game itself. I think it's a wonderful thing. In terms of Jason's group, I don't know. I can't speak for them, but I would suggest that for them, it might have been part of that, hey, that ingrained desire of let's share our story. Let's put it out there. Here's Critical Role. This is what a real D&D game is like, or this is what a more typical D&D game is like. Give that out there. Let other people, you know, let's share that with them so that they can see two varying, it's like comparing two different cars, I would say. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know if that's a good answer or not.
Yeah, that's great. Speaking for my personal, I've been a writer since I was a kid, you know, I was way into fantasy. I wanted to play D&D from a very young age. I actually don't talk about this much, but I wanted to pursue filmmaking ever since I saw the original two Star Wars. And I did pursue it in the early 2000s. And I also pre-produced a web series in 2016, which I had to pull out of. And in order to keep being in a creative place with zero pressure, that's why I got back into D&D. So like I said, you'll see little videos and stuff that I do, because filmmaking is actually my greatest passion. I just don't always pursue it. But that's storytelling. So that's part of the reason, like, I'm open to, you know, being online and doing stuff, is because I've always wanted to get my stories out of my head, and I want to share my stories. I want people to get so pulled into them that they're not thinking about anything else. It's not necessarily escapism, but I want people to, I like writing stories, I like creating characters, and I want to pull people in, have them experience being immersed and come back out and go, wow, like I did with Star Wars and, you know, The Empire Strikes Back and Blade Runner and certain things. And then I've always been a writer. I came to the realization really in my 30s that I wasn't just a filmmaker. I actually was a writer, even though I wrote when I was a kid, started a fantasy novel, never finished anything, but I was like only like 11, and came to the realization later, I am a writer. So as a dungeon master, it's like the ultimate film school. You're creating characters, you're creating story, it's like you're creating immersion. It's really a great film school, but that's not why I play D&D, but it's something I came to the realization of. Dungeon mastering gets you ready for writing, gets you ready for filmmaking, everything else. But I like to, so that's kind of why I would want to expose to my content to people, is I want them to be immersed, and I want them to experience the characters, experience the world, and come out of it going, whew, you know, with ice on their arm because they just travel across, you know, the frozen wastelands. You know, I really want people to be pulled in and then have that release. And so that's kind of with me, you know, is with Critical Role, and I know we keep mentioning it. There's so many things there.
Tim, how often does your group get together and play?
Every Friday.
Every Friday. Every week, except for maybe like a couple times you have to cancel, or is it every week that you play?
It's rare that we cancel. Obviously, COVID has had, you know, it's had some impact on the game. Like just now, we had a member of the group call up and was like, "Hey, I have to go get tested for COVID." If he came back positive, obviously that would have an adverse impact on the game and our schedule. But for the most part, we try to keep playing. And we developed a rule a long time ago with the larger group that we played with, where, look, on Friday or Saturday night when we play, we're playing. If you show up, that's great. You're part of it. If you're not, then your character has developed a case of the runs and won't be in the session. That type of thing. We just keep playing, and nobody gets offended. Nobody gets their feelings hurt.
Yeah.
Let the game go on.
Do you at a, like, play to a certain point and then just start a new game, or are you like the same characters for like a very long time, or how do you like, if you're the dungeon master, how long do you play until you know that is kind of, again, you're going to start a new campaign? Is there like an ending point, or is it just kind of like when you guys are tired of the characters or and just want to start over?
All of the above.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, a TPK, a total party kill, will also put a damper on whatever the campaign is when characters start dying. So that's always part of it. And sometimes it's like, normally I'm not the DM, but the guy who does DM regularly, his father had passed away, and he was at a point where he was like, you know, guys, I'm just mentally fatigued. I'm not in this. I need to step away for a while. And so it's like, all right, you know. I'll DM. So we do that. It might be that, yeah, you know what? We've played these characters. They're 12th level. They're kind of not fun anymore. You know, the risk of dying greatly decreases, and death itself really doesn't become an obstacle if you have the right resources in the game. And people are like, okay, we're done. Let's start something new. So all of those things have factored in over the years that I've played.
Are there any particular characters that stick out to you that you've enjoyed playing? Like, any favorite characters that come to mind, or do you like enjoy all the characters that you've been equally?
Yeah, see, I'm I'm one of those nerds that when I roll up a character, I have to think about everything. I was like, oh, I've got a backstory, and I'll write backstories for them and give them to the DM or give them to, you know, to the other players in the groups like they read them now, because my prose is terrible. But yeah, I get into a lot of my characters. Most memorable, I can't say there's a most memorable. I enjoyed a sorcerer rogue that I played in third edition. And that was mostly because of the group dynamic. We had a lot of fun playing off each other in that particular group. So that might be why that was my favorite character.
Because I know for me, like I kind of am drawn toward particular, my brain's completely blanked. Yeah. classes and races and that sort of thing. Are you drawn to any particular classes, like magic users or fighters, or are you kind of just like to mix it up?
I played pretty much everything, I think. I'm a little bit prone to rogues that dual class into magic, just because I think there's just a lot of mischief that you can get into with a rogue wizard or a rogue sword, any type of rogue spellcaster. But fifth edition, I have the first fifth edition character I played with on a Twitter game was a cleric. And I enjoy playing the cleric.
Clerics are awesome.
So it really, I don't know. I guess probably if I sat down and said, hey, we're going to play a new 5th edition game, I'd probably roll a wizard.
I've thought about that too. What about you, Jason? Do you have a favorite to class or race?
Not a one.
A true DM. He's just like, I am the world. No, I'm kidding.
Right, like, we play do you guys know who Watto Jeff is? At Watto Jeff. Tim, you know him. He's actually my dungeon master right now. He'll come into a game for us here. And right now I'm playing a monk. So like normally, like I like clerics too, Tim. I like clerics too. But I'm playing a monk. You know what? I've played rogues. I like playing rogues. I like playing monks. I really, Tim, do you remember back in the day when they changed the rule sets, you could get like the acrobats, right?
Unearthed Arcana.
Yeah, Unearthed Arcana. Do you remember, like I have the copy of Unearthed Arcana right up here on the shelf, and I was just like, I loved it. All of a sudden, AD&D went from being this sort of box where you just had these characters that could do this, 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 and this. And then they just put a lid on the box and you could open it. And those characters could come alive. Right?
Yeah. I agree. Yeah, I remember what busted open for us was, it used to be when you played a wizard in first edition, the advice you give players is, okay, buy a bunch of daggers. What? Yeah, a bunch of them. Because you're going to cast magic missile, and then you're done for the day. You kind of tapped out, and you have a dagger after that. You know, like, hey, you have your dagger afterwards. And now a friend of ours, we were still playing first edition, so a friend of ours that we all liked, this comic book store that we all kind of looked up to because we were all still kids, he said, yeah, you know, in our game, we give wizards bonus spells like cleric gets bonus spells. And we were like, what?
What?
You can do that? You can change the rule that way? Yeah, who cares? So from then on, it was like just the top blew off and the game just opened up for us. And yeah, I remember that sense of like, oh my goodness. And now as a DM, when you start seeing people start to get upset about like Tasha's, the rage coming out in Tasha's, where now, you know, you can do different class combos or race combos, or instead of, you know, the elves having +1 to their intelligence, now they get +1 to strength because people are upset about it. And I'm like, what? This is when it gets fun.
What about in AD&D? What about in AD&D when like you could only have so much strength per race? I loved it. We don't have that now. Now you
racial caps.
Racial caps. We don't have that in 5e. But you know what? I think on the next game like that I put together for 5e, we're going to institute racial caps because I'm sorry, a human barbarian or a half-orc or barbarian is going to take a gnomish barbarian and eat him for lunch. right?
Without man, yeah, yeah, I get you. I mean, that's interesting. That's in things like that, variations in the game. It's, you know, about what your table want. What makes it more enjoyable for the table and the players there? If you like that, we've played games in third edition where we took classes out and say, okay, you know, nobody can play a cleric. Nobody can play a sorcerer. The only classes that are available right now in this part of the world because of the story are fighter and wizard. That's it.
Yeah.
And nobody grouse. Nobody argues like, oh, okay, let's see what we can do.
Yeah, am I on
right? The- let's see what we can do. Like that's.
Go ahead. Sorry.
That's the whole thing. Let's see what we can do with this set. Like let's move the rule set in this direction, not change the rules, but let's move it in this direction and let's set up something different, right?
I agree.
How many different things have you set up
over the years?
Yeah,
oh, I don't even remember. It's like every
examples.
Every game that we come out with. So like the guy who normally DMs, Frank, it seems like every game we have, he's an anthropologist at heart, and he applies it to D&D, and he'll come out with all these different variations of races where we'll throw out the races as they're written in the player's handbook, and we'll just have the variations that he comes up with or the different races that he pulls from. It's like in third edition, Monty Cook came out with Arcana Unearthed and Arcana Evolved, and it was all new races and all new classes for third edition D&D, and we took off with that. We played and we loved it because we have played D&D for years, so it was always fighter, wizard, mage, sorcerer, human, elf, and Arcana Unearthed kind of did away with that, and they pulled from all the different popular fantasy genres, Stephen R. Donaldson and the Belgariad, and he put them all in those books, and so we had a great time with that.
Question: why are half races always human and the other race?
Yeah, I saw a question on Twitter. I was like, you know, that I'm an old grognard. I hadn't even thought of that before. Why is it always half human and half something else?
Do orcs always just attack human settlements?
Well,
it's because we're humans, man.
We're always going back to, like, Kate, she's like, we're always going back to Critical Role. It's interesting because, you know, Laura Bailey's current character is half tiefling, half water Ganassi. So they definitely saw something there and broke that mold.
Kate's character is half
two things too.
Yeah. She's a half. Yeah. She's a water Ganassi.
I'm a water Genasi.
That is half.
But in our story, sort of how it started is that, like, you know, like you're talking about how D&D has no rules. Basically, what I wanted for my characters to be, like, I don't want to talk too much about myself, but basically my character is not human and something else. She's two other races. So.
Yeah. So cool, water Genasi, but she's a water Genasi, part water elemental and part a different. It's not human, so but yeah, you're right.
I'll ask a question to you, Tim. So is a halfling who has a relationship with a human, is that character now a dwarf?
A quarterling.
quarterling.
Yeah, I don't know. That's, you know, Dark Sun
players might be kind of insulted by that question.
Yeah, they might.
There's no beard in that necessarily. And the desire for ale. I said, we got a half halfling, half human. They're not necessarily going to have a beard. And even the dwarf women, I think, have beards. They're not necessarily going to have an affinity for ale. So I think dwarves might be offended by that question.
Dark Sun started that a little bit back in second edition because I think moles were half orc, half dwarf, weren't they?
Who?
Moles in Dark Sun?
See, I never played
Dark Sun. Dark Sun, never played it.
Yeah, yeah, I wasn't. I'm just sort of semi-familiar.
I think you might be right.
But I know moles were a new race, and I know they were half dwarf, half something. And I think it was half dwarf, half orc.
Vaguely remember that.
Now, that's what, you know, and to pull back a little bit, I think that's why conversations like this, you're talking about why these conversations are necessary. And I think they're necessary for old players and new players in terms of the exchange of ideas that happen. Because you play D&D differently than I do. And you and Caitlin play D&D differently than Jason and I would play D&D when we got together. And you have that exchange of ideas and it opens up the game. And technology, the internet has made that possible because when Jason and I started playing, our groups were pretty much limited to players that we could find. by chance or by luck.
You put
and there was so much stigma attached to it that, you know, some people would look at it like, you play D&D, what? What is that and why would you play it? And so it was really difficult to find players and find stable groups. And then you end up with a situation like Jason where, you know, you get five good people and we all love playing together and somebody moves.
Yeah.
Not because they leave the group, not because there's hate or anger or whatever. But
I moved.
Yeah, life happens and they go. And so what the internet has done, what Critical Role has done, is it's broadened this community where now there are D&D players from all over the world, and little forums like this that hopefully expand open up that exchange of ideas that open up the game for people. Really, that's I think one of the most amazing things that has happened in the last 15-20 years.
Makes it a small, just like, I mean, the main thing, one thing about the internet is it makes the world smaller, and it has had that impact on Dungeons and Dragons. So it's true. Well, that's
awesome.
The other
thing I think it's done that is important here is D&D has an opportunity to be a great power to bring people together. So I follow Jason on Twitter. I love his Twitter account. Some of his postings, especially his political postings, obviously to me, and he probably doesn't know because I don't really post anything about politics. We have fairly different political ideologies, but you know what? Neither one of us care.
I don't.
I love Jason for his love of D&D and the game that he puts together and his sense of humor. And so what happens in terms of his politics? Like, oh, okay, that's nice.
Right?
Yeah, let's talk about D&D, you know?
Yeah, so, they say don't talk about religion, don't talk about politics and something else. Right? It's just true. I mean, it's...
I'm sorry.
You know, I used to be all the way over on the other side of the spectrum. And I am all the way over on the other side of the spectrum now. I don't necessarily... For me, I don't really... Those things, when you come to sit down at the table, right, Tim? When you come to sit down at the table and play, let's just play.
Yeah.
Right?
So, yeah, I think it really has the potential to really draw people, bring people together that may have opposing views on a variety of topics, not just politics or religion. They may have different
views. That's true.
Who knows what? But D&D can really be that vehicle that helps. Like Chris Perkins said a while back, he goes, if everybody played D&D, maybe it was Jeremy Crawford, if everybody played D&D, the world would be a better place. And I tend to agree.
It's true.
I do.
He's, by the way, Chris Perkins is on my list. I forgot to mention him. He is so
interview him.
Quirky, man. Yeah, I might. I mean, you know, it's funny about him. It's funny, actually. I came across this Dungeons & Dragons shoe online and just thought it was so cool. And I shared it. And people loved it, and all these people started liking it. It was kind of one of those fluky things that I mentioned. All these people started, they wanted to go buy it. And Perkins actually followed me. I haven't ever messaged him because that's kind of a thing. I don't think I would do that unless there was a real reason.
He followed me.
I think he followed me because this particular thing, because he's very supportive of D&D, of course, the company he works for. And I think he probably followed me because people really responded to these D&D shoes. So it's kind of, when you say invite him, although maybe I would just invite him in a tweet, I guess I could message him, but then he'll probably unfollow me. Like, no, don't follow me.
I was going to say one other thing. I think something else that's amazing about D&D, and I guess what I kind of get out of D&D is that it's very therapeutic for me. Like and I learn a lot about myself and my own mentality when I inhabit another kind of mentality or another kind of world where I'm kind of in it, but I'm also above it. And I can kind of look at human behavior, even though, you know, different races, you can look at different behaviors. And so for me, I think that D&D has a lot of, you know, more than just getting people together. I think it can be really used for people to get over.
It was the best point that's been made the entire conversation, and it cuts off in the middle of it.
I don't remember what we're talking about.
The mental health aspect.
I'm just saying that, like, it's helped me. Oh my gosh, I don't know how to start back into this. No, it definitely is a way for someone who perhaps has some sort of need to be somebody, not somebody else. Oh my gosh, now I'm describing it so terrible. I'm like,
oh, don't worry, we'll edit you.
Yeah.
Fine.
No.
I like where you're going with it.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for being supportive. but I guess like I'll just start with me and then expand. So for me, like playing D&D really helps me get outside of myself and observe behavior in a different way. And sometimes if something's going on in my life, I can kind of think back to my character and maybe grow as a mentally, like how I can go about different issues, or just even to be a part of something, or to feel, you know, like, I mean, it's awesome being a chick and being able to be this badass, like, you know, warlock that has magic and that, you know, is dark. And, you know, I mean, you can feel good about yourself. It makes you feel important. Mm-hmm. And it makes you kind of also like just because you're with a group of people or an individual like me and James, you're able to kind of get out of your comfort zone and kind of and be more sociable and just, you know, I think it is, anyway, you know what I'm trying to say. It is really amazing for that. You can go ahead, because you know what I'm trying to say. You can continue on. Okay.
Yeah, it's funny. When we started our campaign, she used to, her character would, you should come with me. And now down the road is like, I actually, not every DM is going to want to do this probably, but I run nine characters that in her group of 10 people. And she doesn't always go and do things with all of them at once. You know, if we have big battles, they'll all show up. But we also have friends that aren't in the group that I run. And then there's these allies. I mean, that's the thing about a long campaign. But when it gets late at night, all the voices feel to be like, that doesn't sound like this character. I'm like, after like 10 o'clock, my ability to do different voices starts to, and I don't sound like the characters anymore. And sometimes I'm like, when I think about playing it, like we're going to play, I'm like, okay, am I up to this? Am I up to running this many characters?
Well, that's just also being like having a one-person campaign. That's just kind of what it entails, yeah, is true. That you're literally everything and everybody
else. Yeah. I just happen to like it. It's fun, but I absolutely love go ahead.
Sorry. I was going to ask if that has been your experience with being players. If
as a you person, feel, do you grow?
Do you feel that you've sort of been able to take what you've learned from characters, or just learn from being able to socialize with other people in that sort of way? Like you were saying, that maybe people who would never even be at the same table, being able to kind of communicate in a certain way, or do you feel that kind of happens, where you kind of grow mentally, or like you were talking about mental illness, like how it can help. Do you feel like it's helped you in that way, Tim and Jason?
I'll let you feel this, Tim.
Oh man, I was just about to go you first, Jason. No, you know, I think D&D, when it's run as a teacher, as an educator, they always say when the number one priority in your room is to make sure that the kids feel safe, that there's a safe environment. So I think it translates into the D&D table in terms of, if it's a safe environment, that creates a place where players as people are allowed to take risks or explore ideas or explore conflict resolution, or it can help with conflict resolution, or it can help with learning to speak out and kind of put your foot down in certain situations, to hold your ground when needed, and learn how to negotiate with other people through the game. So I've definitely seen that over the years that I've played. And like Jason, I started on one end of the political spectrum and I shifted. Mm-hmm. And I think D&D to some degree has had a lot to do with that. I know it's had a lot to do with molding me and my perspectives, my world perspectives, my personal perspectives. It's had a lot to do with that. And you explore those ideas and those themes and those emotions and soft skills with other mm-hmm. people. That's all happened through the Dungeons & Dragons game. That's why the benefits are just amazing. Leave escapism out of it. Leave having fun and, you know, beer and pretzel game out of it.
Right, sure.
Leave all that out of it. The mental health issues, the socialization benefits, all those things are things that can be worked through. And it's not a cure by any means. It's not a magic bullet. But it's certainly a wonderful tool and opportunity to be used to help with those issues.
Tim, I think it goes back to that idea of we want to share stories. And when we share stories, when we're intimate in small groups with people, and we share stories, that draws people into closer relationships. I heard Ravi Zacharias talk about relationships and building bridges from people's heads to their hearts. And the only way to build relationships is to get close to people. And when you get close to people, Kate, you're allowing yourself to be vulnerable. And when we allow ourselves to be vulnerable with people, it can open up doors. It can shut doors too, but it allows people to see who you are. And if people are willing to accept you, Tim, you accept me for who I am, though you and I have some fundamental differences, right? But I go on other people's Twitch channels and I watch their games, and fundamentally their worldview is different than mine. But I'm not there to talk about worldview. I'm there to listen to their game. I'll do a quick type in chat. Hey, just wanted to stop by, say hello. Hey, it sounds like you guys are having fun. Enjoy your game. Have a wonderful evening. We allow ourselves to get vulnerable with people. We can, even if people are fundamentally different, they have fundamental worldview differences. If we can sit down at the table and tell stories together, we can learn about one another. And that's when we start listening. Mama used to tell me, and I've said this on Twitter a lot, Mama used to tell me, son, you have two ears and one mouth. Learn how to take the cotton out of these and put it in there. When we learn how to listen to others, and really hear what they're saying, we can ask questions and we can really get to the heart of other people. And I think games in general, especially role-playing games, where we can get together and tell stories and be vulnerable around a table. Like, I never knew Kelly before Kelly sat at our table. I never knew that. I never knew him. I met him on Twitter. I met Jeff, Watto Jeff, on Twitter, on D&D Beyond, actually. I met James here on Twitter. I met you, Tim. Where? On Twitter. I didn't know who you people were. But you know what? We can come around a table, and that's what we're doing today. We're around a table telling stories. And though we are fundamentally, there's lots of differences, we agree on one thing. We can get together and tell a story with a game and enjoy it and have fun. And that draws people together. And I think where I used to be very standoffish, I'm 50 years old now. I'm moving into a time in my life where I really want to join. I want to join people. I want to draw people together. Not in some false brotherhood of mankind, but in something that is more genuine, right? And I think telling stories can move us in that direction.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I keep going back, I guess, to scriptural verses. My background is right-wing conservative Christianity, so things that I have learned over the years still hit me when I look at D&D. I've kind of shifted from that, but you know, that verse, forsake not the assembling of yourselves, everybody interprets that as like that means you need to go to church. I don't think that's what it meant at all. I think it addresses a primal human need of to be together with like-minded people, pursuing a common goal. with a common purpose that enriches your life, that enriches your soul. Whether that happens inside of a church building or it happens here around the table is irrelevant. We need spaces. Part of us to need to want to socialize with people mm-hmm. that we have commonalities with.
Well, I always like the verse that says, "Be at peace as much as it is possible with one another, with your neighbor." It says, "Be at peace as much as it is possible with your neighbor." And you know what? That's what we're supposed to do. Like, we see all the things going on in the world, but like, let's just try to promote some peace. Like, right. Even if it's in our own little world, even if it's with our...
you are a monk cleric.
You know, who's our neighbor? You guys, until I met you, your neighbor is just somebody you haven't met yet. It's just that person you have, like, it's the person you stick your hand out and say, hello, and you shake them by the hand and you say, how are you? What's your name? Right? You sit down at a table, you play a game, you get to know people, and you build relationships.
Can I use that to springboard to a different topic?
Absolutely.
Please, if that's okay.
Yes.
Yeah. I know I'm like monopolizing the camera all of a sudden.
No, I want to hear it.
So what you're talking about, that neighborliness, that openness, there's Twitter, I think probably the past couple years, I used to see it a lot, and it used to just, like, well, I didn't understand where they talked about gatekeeping and exclusivity in Dungeons and Dragons, and especially when it came to female players and players of different sexual orientation, LGBTQ community, mm-hmm. feeling like they were marginalized or not play at a table. I kept thinking, you know, as female players started to come into our games, we were ecstatic. We thought that was awesome.
Right?
I guess it has to happen. It's got to be out there because it's become such an issue and a hot button issue. But I've never met a group of D&D players that ever said, no, you know, we don't want players based on some type of criteria. Or I've never met a D&D group that said, no, we don't want more players. It's always like, oh, there's a new player.
Somebody else wants to play with us?
Yes.
Okay. I'd be like the dog with my tail just going, somebody wants to play D&D with me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then if you're a 16, 17-year-old kid, maybe even to your 20, what, a girl wants to play D&D? Really? What? Really? Okay. Sit down. Let's play. I'm wondering where that came from and if that's a common experience, you know, James or Caitlin, that you have had, that you saw that early on in your D&D careers, because I never saw it. I guess Jason.
Me neither.
So I guess
I've only seen it on Twitter.
Is this something that you've experienced?
For me, like I say, when I was a teenager and really wanted to play, the only thing I was exposed to were the rule lawyers, the people that were trying to be the smart, where either DM was always trying to prove that he was the smartest one in the room, or players were trying to prove that. And there was a lot of, that's what I ran into, is that people were spending, I was like, my God, it's like, it's so hard to get a group together, so hard. And we got 4 hours to play or 3 hours to play. And, you know, one third of it or more is people arguing, opening up the books and arguing about the rules.
Yeah.
Cause it's kind of funny, the whole, not to generalize, but the whole nerd thing or geek thing or whatever, which obviously became kind of more popular. My experience is that when I was younger, that were people that were quote unquote, I guess, nerds or whatever, that there was often an arrogance in regards to just intelligence. And I felt, I felt more of that, more of a prejudice, like people thinking they were smarter than others, that they, mm-hmm. you know, and it was like often the people that had the big egos were the ones that wanted to be dungeon masters, because then they controlled everything. They had the greatest power. They were it was ego. And so that's why I was like, God, I just want to play D&D, man. So that's why I was like, so I haven't had experience with the girl thing or with the LGBT community. I haven't had issues personally myself. No, I have not.
I guess I'm trying
arrogance of thinking that they're smarter than everybody else.
I guess I'm trying to understand exactly what you're saying. So people are upset that there isn't more more openness to having a girl player or having different people in different areas or play, or what exactly is the
What I saw was an issue being raised that players of a certain gender or a certain sexual orientation were being barred from playing at a table because of the gender or because of their sexual orientation. Although somebody, well, I don't know how you can judge sexual orientation just by looking at somebody. I don't know how that works, but
Twitter's where I saw the Twitter is where I heard about all these people that felt like they weren't welcome at a table. Yeah. And then it, so go ahead, Kate.
Yeah. I mean, obviously I haven't been playing for that long, but as a girl player, when I, the first group that I ever was exposed to was all guys. Oh no, there was one girl, right? Or wait, no, there was one girl, one other girl. But they were very welcoming with me being a part of it, you know, and joining them. But I mean, I'm sure that any sort of bigger issue that a society has is going to, and as D&D is becoming more popular, it's going to become more kind of apparent, maybe the issues. So if there is some sort of bigger issue with females being included in certain things, I'm sure that somewhere it's going to be kind of shown in D&D, you know, but it's not D&D as a system. It's just the people that are playing it, just like anything, you know, mm-hmm. It's not D&D as a system. There, I'm sure that there are complete jerks that are probably misogynistic, that don't want women involved or want women to be a certain way in D&D and don't want them to have power. But I think that that's like an individual kind of thing. And I don't think you can base sort of D&D as a gameplay off that. Because I mean, honestly, D&D is, like you said before, it's whatever anyone does with it, you know?
Yes.
And so people can use it as a way to divide people, for sure. People can use it as a way to keep people down. But but for the most part, I see it being like a way for people to actually explore more of like who they are and stuff, you know, and explore ideas and explore, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, people can like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. But like with Critical Role, you know, there's people who are in relationships that are like, you know, in the current one, there's like two women that like each other that they probably aren't actually that way, you know, like you can explore different things. I don't know if you're going
to. No, I will say this though. I will say that the tables that I was exposed to, around, I've noticed that generally for every, you know, five or six players, only one was a girl, you know. I mean, I did notice that there were less girl players, but that's, and critical really isn't a bad word to me. With Critical Role, one of the things I did notice is right at the bat, if they have three girls in the group, which actually has been a huge plus, I think. You know, I'm not saying you need to be a boy or you need to be a girl, but I will say that it was neat to kind of see, because most of the games I have been exposed to tend to have just one girl, right? even on Twitch and all that. But maybe not. It's getting less and less like that. But back in 2017 or whenever I first started seeing Critical Role, and I was like, "Oh, that's cool. They have three girls in the group. That's I'm not. You wasn't used to seeing that many. So I knew that there. You know, I didn't think one. I didn't know if there was that many. There may just be more boys that are into this kind of thing. I don't know. But not these days. These days, maybe it was never that way. Maybe it's just that they were excluded for a while, and things are just evolving where they should have all, you know.
I don't know where all the exclusion came from, because when I was a kid playing D&D 14, as I grew 14, 15, 16, I started going to the local con where I lived and playing, because they always ran a tournament. So you always signed up for the tournament. You paid your $10 or whatever it was, and you played in the tournament. Whether you played, like, there was always different tournaments. There was a D&D tournament. There was an ElfQuest tournament. There was a Gamma World tournament. There was different tournaments for each kind of game that the organizers managed to get somebody to come out and run. There was always girls. There was never not girls.
That's cool.
I don't know. I don't like that whole idea of gatekeeping. That's, you know, like, yeah. I understand there are some guys out there or some people out there who have a certain idea of, like, Dungeons and Dragons is for this group of people. Okay, I get that. There are some people out there like that. But for me, it was never that way. Tim, I don't know, like, when you were a kid, did you always have, like, were the girls always around, wanted to play? Like, at school, no. The girls didn't want to play with us at lunchtime. They just thought we were being geeky and nerdy, and they would come over and watch us a bit and giggle and laugh and then go away. But when I went to cons, there was always girls there in our group that I played in. I think there was two or three girls there. So I don't know, like, for me, I've always seen that. I've always seen there's gals. I would love to have another gal at the table. And I think if we ever fill the seat, I hope we can find some, can find a gal to come and sit down and play and be at the table with us.
You know, when we would play in high school on occasion, girls would come in and they would be spectators, but they never expressed a desire to play. Mm-hmm. They never asked to play. I know the first time that there was a girl at the table where I played was when I had a girlfriend and she asked to play. She mm-hmm. thought it was interesting. She was a theater choir. She was like, oh, yeah. This is like so much fun. You know, I want to play. Okay. So she played and had a good time. Now at our current table on Friday nights, the girls outnumber the guys. Wow. If you subtract me as the dungeon master, it's a 3-2. If you put me in, then we're even. You know, we kind of have some parity, but for the most, we have more girl players than we do boys.
Yeah, and I've never not known that. Like, it's just like if I could have girls at the table, I'd always have girls at the table. It just makes for better storytelling.
Yeah, I do think having girls included or having, you know, sexual orientations included, even inside the games. And I think it's something that I've actually tried to do as a DM, is to make sure that I try to include, you know, and also try to include different body types, try to include different races, like actual, like human people who are different colors. Because I just think that it's important for people to feel included, like you said, to have a place where they feel included. But I don't ever think it's like an exclusive thing. In my experience, it hasn't been an exclusive thing, but I do think that it's really, I think it's a really complicated sort of thing to talk about a little bit, because you want this to be a game where people have fun, where it's not as mm-hmm. maybe serious and you're telling a story, but there is, because it's becoming more of a bigger thing, there is a need to kind of talk about how we tell stories and who we include and who we empower and what we focus on. And I think that it can be uncomfortable a little bit to do that, but I also think that it can be a way to build as well. As my character, you know, I am maybe more of a stereotypical, my character is more of a stereotypical, like, pretty looking woman or whatever, but I wouldn't mind, you know, having a character that maybe was a different physique than what is stereotypically beautiful or whatever. So I just think being kind of telling stories that maybe reflect something that makes other people feel included is good, because it, you know, if, you know, there's someone that happens to be black or happens to be whatever and they want to be included, that sort of has to be a part of the gameplay too. So I think it just depends on who is in your, you know, who your players are as a DM, and also just to communicate it too with your DM if you're a player. You know, I would like to be represented more in the story, or, you know, I would like, you know, people of color to be more if I'm a person of color. You know, I think it's just kind of talking. It's, you know, it's difficult, like I said, it's difficult to like get political or to make it about something, but it is just kind of something that I think at the beginning of a game with other players, just to kind of say, oh, well, if there's ever any issues, or if you want something more, you can tell me, or if, you know, there's anything else that would make you feel more comfortable. And like you said, Jason, if you're able to get that and make people feel comfortable in the world, then they can be vulnerable. And so I don't really know about the exclusivity of it all, but I definitely think that, you know, like you said, listening is good. And also to maybe try to, you know, obviously somewhere there probably is something going on where girls feel maybe they can't be included as much. But I do think it's changing, of course. I mean, I never thought that I would be, sorry if I'm talking a lot. I never thought that I would be into D&D, but as it opened up, I became more into it. So it might just be like a cultural thing, not cultural, but, you know, like a shift of D&D where as it becomes more popular, more girls can feel included. So who knows really what the whole thing is about. But yeah. I think that's a good thing to talk about in a kind of interview type thing.
Oh. Yes. Well, I think we've covered just about everything. There's nothing left for any of us to say.
I'm good.
No, but this is our first episode, and I'm not sure if it'll be all in one episode. I have to edit it and all be in an episode, or it'll be segments or whatever, depending on how long the ones run or what we want to put in. But I appreciate you guys. You guys have been awesome part of the D&D community for me. I know I stepped away for like a year plus because of my just stuff in life, came back, and you guys are right there, still there, being supportive. And to be honest with you, I would love to actually play with you guys sometime. I mean, obviously, when you have this kind of rapport, if any, you kind of want to, I can't help but think, you know, as a player or a DM or whatever, we'd love to get us maybe even a couple more together sometime.
Well, this makes me excited because I'm excited to see who you put together on other episodes and what their perspectives and opinions are. Just like, you know, it's so cool to watch Jason and his group play, but the way they play D&D. You're like, oh, that's such a great idea. Or that is so awesome. They play the same thing. Here we are. We're separated by 900 miles, and we have these commonalities in the game, and then we have these awesome differences in the game. I'm excited to see who you pull in next and what their ideas and opinions are on topics. This is really one. I told you that when you did this the first time. I think this is just a wonderful.
Yeah, this is a great idea.
Yeah, I loved the DM where we just had a bunch of DMs, and I really love the way that felt, and I had a really great time, and then this is just something that's evolved since then. But that was in the back of my mind how much I enjoyed doing that, and the conversations that come out, and just connecting and everything else, and just being with other people that are raw enthusiasts of the game, RPGs in general, but my main focus is D&D. But yeah, so I thank you guys, I'll get all your links, be wherever this thing is. This will be up on YouTube, but put your links down below and all that.
Please post. Please let us know when you post like another episode. Obviously, this one we were all here for the conversation.
But
when
you guys you want to, I'll let you guys know.
Yeah. I want to watch.
Yeah, and I'm gonna talk to the camera now. No, but if you're a dungeon master or a player, Dungeons and Dragons is the main thing. Every now and then, we will get into our other RPGs. Or if you're a content creator, any kind of content, whether you make dice or bags, or modules, or shows, whatever. That's the main thing of the show. I appreciate you guys all checking it out, and look forward to the next one.